Hello and welcome to WonderPod, episode 46. This is the last episode of the year for WonderPod. That's right, we're going to take a couple week break after this. Joining me as always is Gunsage.
Hello.
And Patrick from Calgary.
What is going on, people? It is the end of the world episode. Just end of the year.
By the way, did you see are you aware of the Calgary Hitmen's teddy bear thing in hockey, Patrick?
Yes, I am. Yes.
Did you see the video of that from last night?
I didn't know. Is there lots?
23,096 fucking teddy bears flying onto the ice after a guy scored a goal in the third, 3 minutes and 49 seconds into the game. It stopped the game for like 35 minutes.
You know what the other team should have done? The delay of game penalty.
Yeah, well, it's for charity. I mean, those, it's a cool thing, but yeah.
Well, what was hilarious. Delay of game.
When I saw it on Yahoo, I watched the video, and my first thought was, well, at least it's not canned food for the homeless night.
Yeah.
And about 12 comments down, somebody said, thank God it wasn't canned food night, because I mean,
yep.
It's cool. Since we're talking about it, ladies and gentlemen, charity where you bring a bear to this minor league hockey game, you throw it onto the ice, and then the bear gets donated to children's hospitals and other things like that around Calgary and Alberta. And last night, they got 23,096 of them. I mean, it just looked like snow, dude, for a while there. It's just bears flying out of the state. I mean, it was great.
That's cool. Yeah.
It was great. A little bit of trivia for you, Patrick. Why are they named the Calgary Hitmen? Which I already knew. Before
because
I saw it.
Bret Hart owns them.
Yes, partial owner.
Yeah,
partial owner.
He used to have a better jersey, another piece of their original jersey, which got taken down for the league. Had a more aggressive looking Jason-like character, and he was running up with like a high stick, which they had for about half of a season, and then it got taken away.
I remember that. I think there was still a bit of controversy.
They're probably around.
Taken away. Yeah.
I think it was the high stick thing that really that's why they got to change their jersey.
Well, and I can vaguely recall that they wore his pink and black in like one home game during the year, and it was the most god-awful looking hockey sweater I think I've ever seen.
Yep. Hopefully they didn't try a sharpshooter with skates on. Not good.
No, ask Mike Madonna about that. By the way, if you're just joining us, welcome to Hockey Talk. Gunsage won't be saying anything because he's never seen a hockey game. Okay. So, flying teddy bears aside, this is our year-end show, but we're going to start it a little normal to kind of break you in, because as everybody knows, year-end and best-of and list shows and that kind of crap usually go one of two ways. They're really, really great, or they're a real disaster. Either way, in a day or so, you will hear the results. Patrick, what have you been playing this week?
Okay, well, with our highlight show being last week, I'm sure everyone's downloaded that. It's been a couple weeks now since our last episode, and I know Gunsage, it's been 2 or 3 weeks also, so I'm sure we've been playing a lot of stuff. Of course, I've been playing the usual Halo Reach with friends of the show, and I've been loving Donkey Kong Country Returns as well, but, I'll be talking about those two games, spoiler, in more detail a little later on in the program. So I'm going to talk about now how I had a very, very cheap few weeks of gaming in the last week, really. How cheap, you ask? Well, I've downloaded two good, surprisingly good, Xbox Live Arcade titles and two downloadable contents for games I have, and I've only spent $1 for all these four things. First, I'll talk about the free DLC, absolutely free for Kinect Sports. In some places, they call it the Samsung Pack, and I think Samsung must be sponsoring it. Thank you, Samsung. I like your TVs, and that's why it's free. Other places, it's just called DLC. I don't care what you call it. If I don't have to pay a dime for it, it's free, and it's for me. It's basically more mini-games for every event in Kinect Sports, giving the very fun title even more replayability and humor. There's also some crazy new mascots. I think one is like a scarecrow who looks like he's on crack or something. Kind of funny. Silly yet fun bowling mini games and volleyball games. They're probably my favorite of the mini games of the whole bunch. aside from a giant jumbotron in one of the stadiums that has the word Samsung written on it, there's, you know, I'd rather have that and pay nothing than pay for DLC. So I think that's pretty cool. I think T-Mobile is also going to do one, so hopefully there'll be more free DLC for Kinect Sports. The second DLC that I played very recently, a couple days ago, really, is for Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2. It's the Endor downloadable content, and this was the only thing I had to pay for, $1. That's right, $1. I don't know if it's an apology for not having a great sequel to Star Wars The Force Unleashed, especially the story. I don't know what it is, but hey, for a dollar, I'll do it. It's another one of the alternate universe ones. I've talked about them on the original one. One listener of the show by the name of John Kind called it a what-if scenario, and I think that really explains it really well. You know, what if the Empire wins, basically, you know. This time you're playing the events in Return of the Jedi timeline, and you get to kick Ewoks' asses all over the place. I mean, for $1, just being able to kill off these little buggers over and over is well worth it. Fry some Ewoks with lightning? Sure, sounds good. Lift them up in the air and drop them 30 feet on their head? Fun too. Force push them, you can do all sorts of great stuff. You get the picture. Also, later on, you find yourself, spoiler, fighting Han Solo and Chewie and Leia, who's now taken the role of a Jedi because Luke was killed in the alternate universe Hoth DLC. So, it's not the best level design, to be honest. It's very, very linear. I mean, you're on the moon of Endor. It should be a really nice place to explore, right? Basically filmed in the Redwood Forest. Very beautiful place. But you can't really explore much of it. Your path is very limited to an almost straight tunnel to the Ewok village, and then through the Ewok village into the shield generator made famous in the movie. But it's still fun. I enjoy it. I enjoy the what-if scenario, and, you know, these DLCs are kind of neat. For those of you who are crying like little babies, and there's some of them on the internet saying, I cannot believe Chewie and Han get killed by Starkiller, shut the hell up. It was just a what-if scenario. It didn't change the storyline. It didn't change the movies. Get over it. Another thing I don't understand is Luke, Boba Fett, Obi-Wan, Leia, everyone gets killed, but they don't seem to give a crap. All they care about is Chewie and Han dying. It's really weird. Anyways, for $1, it's great fun. It's got a few glitches. It's very linear, but killing Ewoks with the Force is well worth your dollar. And what else have I been playing? So that's it for my DLC. Quickly, I'll talk about the two Xbox Live Arcade games, which were also absolutely free. I've played these with our very own Bruce McGee and Gamer Man X just last night. They're sponsored by Doritos. That's another reason why it's free. Both are pretty damn good quality games. I was very impressed with them. You know, everyone should at least give them a try, at least for the multiplayer. First is a racing game with a twist to it, and that's the name of that is, I think it's called Harm's Way. Is that what it was called, Bruce? I think. Was it Harm's Way?
Yeah, Harm's Way. And they're both finalists in a contest Doritos held.
Oh, okay. So, yeah. And the twist to this racing game is that every racer has a partner who is stationed kind of above the tracks in strategic places. I don't know. I guess you could call them turrets. Are they turrets or just gun stations? I don't know. But they're sniping at the other racers as they go along the track in their dune buggies and their trucks. So basically, you can play as the sniper, gunner, or the racer. It's kind of fun. There's only three tracks, but whatever. It's free. The other Xbox Live Arcade title that's also free is Crash Course 2. And I almost like this one better. It's, I think, Gunsage, I think you'd really like this one. Have you tried it, Crash Course 2?
I noticed there were two, what is it, like Dorito games or whatever?
Yeah.
I downloaded them, but I haven't gotten a chance to play them yet, no.
I think you might like Crash Course 2 because it's basically a really funny and fast platform game. It plays like a 2D platform game where your avatar tries to avoid, I don't know, obstacles and all sorts of shit. Have you ever seen that show, what the hell's that show called? Wipeout? You ever seen that show Wipeout or Most Extreme Challenge, that Japanese one where they're going
MXC.
Those... MXC,
or
yeah.
Ninja Warrior.
Well, you know how they're going across some of those obstacle courses and they fall into the water. It's like that. It reminds me a lot of that. And there's a lot of platforming here inspired by games. Like we were playing this yesterday, Bruce. Donkey Kong Jr. came into play with the chains, Pitfall, Super Mario Brothers, Jungle Hunt. I was impressed with it. I mean, it's fun platforming. I think you'd probably like it there, Gunstage. But anyways, that is finally all that I have been playing for only $1.
Gunstage, what have you been playing this week?
This particular week, I've literally been playing over 100 games. Therefore, I'm only going to highlight four. I've mostly because of the whole RPG of the year, adventure game of the year, and now I'm thinking probably Brawler of the Year, if I can get my bearings on that one, because it's taken a while to research. First one is Betrayal at Krondor, which is a 1993 RPG, and as soon as I listed it, I was like, ah, shit, now I need to go back and play it. Basically, it's a really, really well-written PC RPG. It's medieval-themed, and what's really cool about it is it's a survival RPG, and it's traditional, which normally would turn me off of it, because a lot of more traditional PC RPGs, I'm kind of like, I don't know. But it's easy enough to work your way into, figure out, and just kind of, you know, get your bearings and move around on it. Plus, the story's interesting enough, the characters and the writing in general are really good, that you just keep playing it. Literally, you'll sit there and you'll be like, I should probably put this down. I've only been playing for 5 minutes, but still. And then it's like, no, it's been 3 hours. So, I refer to that as the Sims effect. But, yeah, basically, Betrayal at Krondor is one of those games that you absolutely cannot put down, and it's a great older RPG. I've also been playing some more New Vegas, and strangely, I have only experienced glitching as far as certain enemies getting stuck in the ground. Unfortunately, every time I put that game in and start playing it, I'm like, yeah, this kind of reminds me of Fallout 3 way, way too much to the point that I'd really rather just be playing Fallout 3. I literally got bored on some of the last missions. So, I don't know. I feel like they really didn't change enough to make it its own game. It's still fun. It's still got some new features and everything, but there are times where it almost feels like the fun is just kind of speckled here and there. It's not like an experience, not like the first one was. Well, first, third one, whichever. I also started playing No One Lives Forever again, which is a first-person shooter by Monolith. They also did games like Blood, Condemned Fear, things of that nature. It's a game about basically being a spy for a British agency in the 1960s. There's a lot of humor involved. It's real good as far as being faithful, as far as the music of the time, you know, attitude toward women and all kinds of different stuff. So it's a really fun and funny first-person shooter. And finally, I've been playing a game that, unfortunately, Bruce, you would really like to play, but I don't think you have a PSP, so that might be a problem, and that is Zetai Hero Project Unlosing Ranger versus Dark Death Evil Man. Yes. it's a roguelike RPG. For listeners that don't know, that basically means anytime you move, everyone else moves too. Moves are counted as far as actual moving spaces or attacking or what have you. So very similar to games like Epic Dungeon. Well, Epic Dungeon is real time, but yeah. Very similar in format to that. What's neat about it is it's Nipponichi Software, so it's absolutely over the top and crazy, inspired by Disgaea. It even has some elements of Disgaea, but it is not Disgaea. That is one thing you have to remember going into it. It is, first and foremost, a roguelike RPG, very unforgiving, really nice risk-reward system, and just all kinds of crazy customization that you can do within the game. I mean, I don't know if you have a PSP or not. Probably not. But that would definitely be a game that you would want to play for in the event that you get a PSP anytime soon. And that's it.
Yeah, I'm not buying a PSP for a RPG. Sorry.
I know.
I have an iPhone, and it has RPGs on it. So there you go. What I've been playing, well, for those of you that don't know, the reason it was the best of show last week was I was on vacation, so I got to pick up from a little bit of last week and a lot of this week. I picked up Epic Dungeon that Gunstage was talking about. It's on Xbox Live. It's an indie game. It's basically, it reminds me a lot of Gauntlet. It's like Gunsage said, you move, the enemies move, you're going down, down, down. It's fun. It's pretty simple. It's a great time killer. It's 80 points on Xbox Live. I mean, it's more almost of a dungeon brawler, you know. I highly recommend picking it up. I mean, 80 points on Xbox Live, you know. Yeah, well, how can you lose? Been playing a ton more Minecraft. I've been making what is known on Twitter, at least my Twitter feed, as the Bruce McGee Memorial Subway and Brothel. The subway part is going pretty well. The brothel part's not working too well because zombies and creepers don't make good prostitutes, but I'm working on it. I've also picked up the two free Dorito games when I got back from my vacation. It's funny because I'm the opposite, and part of it's because I do not like platformers. And this game last night gave me a prime example of why I think sometimes platformer developers are just lazy. There was a section in there that you had to do 6 really hard things. Now I'm talking about Crash Course 2, so there you go. You had to do 6 really hard things to get from one checkpoint to the next. I have never in my life seen where this is considered good design, when you could take and put a checkpoint after 3 of the very difficult tasks and before the other 3 difficult tasks and not make it any less fun, not make it any less of a challenge for the hardcore platformers like Patrick. So anytime I run across that, it just annoys me because it's shoddy. I mean, I wasn't the only one that couldn't get through it. Gamerman X barely got through it before I did. So while I like the game and it's going to be fun with a group of us in a party, whatever, I tend to lean more towards the In Harm's Way, the other Dorito game. That's probably also too because I like racers. Both of them are very fun and very well done. As I said a little bit ago when Patrick was talking, they are a contest finalist, best as I could tell. Major Nelson was saying something about it. But they're both really well done games. In Harm's Way will remind you a little bit of Borderlands if you've played that. But overall, really fun games. I think I've actually got Patrick beat. Well, wait a minute. How many Microsoft points was the Ewok DLC?
$1, 80 points.
Okay, so we're tied, because I think I only spent, yeah, because I didn't buy anything else. I didn't buy any iPhone games this week. So I think we're tied at 80 points apiece in 1 week of gaming.
Sweet.
Considering I don't even want to add up how many titles I bought this year, I'll take a cheap week. And that is what we've been playing. Now, before we get into the end of the year stuff, where we wrap up all the things we've done on the first 45 shows, or best as we possibly can in an hour or so, I was talking to one of our listeners, Patrick was also there, I think it was Gamerman X, I can't remember, about my trip. I went to the city of San Francisco, which I enjoy visiting from time to time. I'd like to thank the city for being great, as always, and not throwing me out. But during my trip, I was walking with a friend of mine. We were just coming from lunch. By the way, Gamerman X said I should tell this story on air. I'm getting a little ahead of myself. Anyway, my friend and I just left the restaurant. We're walking down the street, down in Marina District in San Francisco. If you live there, you'll know what I'm talking about. And we're walking down the street, and all of a sudden, out of the corner of my eye, I see 2 bushes. Now, they were kind of green, leafy bushes, right? And so, like, I turn my head to look at them, and all of a sudden they open, and this guy sticks his head out and screams at us. It scared the shit out of me. It scared the shit out of my friend. And it was a guy panhandling behind these bushes. He was on his knees with 2 bush limbs or pieces, whatever you want to call them. And the way he panhandled it scared the shit out of people. They'd go, oh, ha-ha, you got me, and put money in his jar, right? Well, okay, fine, whatever. I didn't put any money in his can, but it's like, wow. That's actually kind of creative, you know. So I go back to my hotel room, and I'm thinking, man, I want some water. I think I'm just going to go right back down, run to the drugstore on the corner and get some water. As I'm walking down the street, now this is several blocks up from where my friend and I got scared. As I'm walking down the street, I see behind this cement, kind of almost mall-style garbage can, you guys all know the kind I'm talking about, a guy hiding there with bushes. And I thought, oh, I got your ass now. You've moved up closer to my hotel. I'm going to scare you. So I creep up behind him, and he can't see me coming because of the garbage can that he's leaning against. And in my best Alabama trying to get animals in order to feed them voice, I went, "What are y'all doing?" And just screamed, and his bushes go flying, and he's like, "Oh," and he jumps forward, and I walk off chuckling, and there was a shop owner or something standing on the side of the street, and he watched it all, and he was laughing. And so I walk down the street, I get my bottles of water, I'm coming back out of the street, coming up back to the hotel, and I look, and the guy is still there. The thing is when I looked at him facing him, this guy had Christmas tree boughs that he had cut. It was a completely different guy that I scared the shit out of rather than the guy that had scared me previously at lunch when we were coming from lunch. So apparently there's a whole tribe of Bush's panhandlers down there in San Francisco. I put a couple bucks to the guy's keg because I kind of felt bad about scaring him. So there you go, Gamer Man X. I have told my story. Have you gentlemen ever run into any Bush's panhandlers?
I have not run into any panhandlers with bushes myself. Most of the ones around here are stopped at red lights with a sign, with some ridiculous sign or something, and we ignore them. Basically, I tell them to get a job because they look younger and in better shape than I am.
Gunsage, have you ever run across the Bush people in Ohio, or are they native to just the San Francisco Wharf District or Marina District?
I'd literally never heard of that, but I think if I saw one, I'd have to go ahead and attack him with my hedge trimmer.
Yeah, well, Patrick said last night when I was telling this story, he's like, "I'd be afraid you were going to get mugged." And that was the thing. You knew that he never really moved. He just moved his upper body and his head. But over the course, that was like the second day I was in San Francisco, and we pretty much stuck around in Marina District and a little bit in Union Square and other places in the city, but I saw them all but one day, both of them. Unlike what Patrick's talking about, they were both fairly older gentlemen, looked like they'd been on the road or out in the outdoors for a while. So there you go. Now we're going to go right into the end of the year stuff. Hope you enjoyed the little story. Hope you found it as amusing as Gamer Man X did. I thought it was pretty good myself too. Okay. So basically, folks, I'm just going to give these guys some topics to yammer about. We're going to talk about it. It's kind of going to wrap up all the shows we've done this year. First one I want to do right out the gate. Patrick, what was your favorite news story or topic we covered in 2010?
Well, I gave this a little bit of thought and I kept coming back to the same thing. I guess it was not as much of a topic, but a story. And that would be the announcement of the 3DS by Nintendo. I don't remember exactly when in 2010 it was announced. Of course, there were rumors the DS was getting a little bit old in the tooth, so to speak. Technology was never state-of-the-art to begin with, so we all knew that there was going to be some sort of update to the DS, a new DS. Personally, I thought it would be somewhat like, I was expecting a DS Advanced, basically. You know, like how the Game Boy went from the Game Boy to the Game Boy Advance, a new system that was pretty much just a graphical update. I wasn't expecting the 3DS, that's for sure. You know, I love the original DS. It's innovative. I like the two screens. I like the touch screen, all of that stuff. Games like Mario Kart DS and Metroid were the first real online games from Nintendo, you know? So it was portable. It was innovative. Needed an update. So it was unexpected, the 3DS, and pretty darn cool, especially the fact with, "Sorry, Sony, no 3D glasses required." I like how hardly anyone really at the time, and even since then, who has had hands-on with the 3DS, have had anything really negative to say about it, which in this industry is pretty freaking rare that there isn't at least one person who wants to make a name for themselves and start trashing the 3DS, you know? The original DS had a lot more people saying bad things about it. So, as we know, the price, the only thing that I didn't like was the price seems to be rumored kind of high. But if it comes with a game, like the Wii has come with a game or something like that, or it lives up to its hype, I'll be picking up the 3DS probably soon after launch day. Even at a ridiculous price, I probably will. So, for me, the best news story, favorite news story, Nintendo 3DS announcement.
That was at E3, by the way. We covered that during our E3 Craptacular. See, he's nice. He said special. I said craptacular. That ought to give you the yin and yang of how this mess works. Gunsage, what was yours?
I have a relatively short memory, so I thought it was pretty funny whenever we did the Kinect porn hack thing.
Oh yeah, the story where it was hacked, and then it kind of morphed into us talking about porn, and then it wasn't like, but about a month later that Penny Arcade had one where it shows Tycho sweating and he's doing it all wrong, and yeah, I want to go on record as saying we started that down that road, and then of course now you see all these things they're doing with Kinect and with it being hacked.
Well, before that they had this parody. One of my former coworkers showed it to me. Is like, you've played the Wii, but now you need to get her into the game. So now buy the she, and you see it. And she's taking the controller and she's like riding it and doing all this crazy stuff to it.
I've seen it. Yeah, that's a funny video.
Yeah, I've seen that one too. But yeah, the it's gonna happen, ladies and gentlemen. I mean, we're doing a best or wrap up the year show, but let's do a little future prognostication. It's gonna happen. Just like everything. I mean, I'm seeing so many things being done with Kinect right now, we will probably see some kind of modded porn game that you can only play, you know, offline or something to that effect.
Well, now I'm just waiting until Grand Theft Auto 5 comes out and, you know, Rockstar accidentally has a fully compatible Kinect hot coffee game. You know, with an I don't know how you did it.
That was weird.
Yeah. Hacked achievements for it? No, no, that's not really part of the game, you know.
Yep.
Oh, I'm sure some Japanese perverse developers are already making one as we speak.
Yeah, it's just, yeah.
They'll port Boonga Boonga.
There's so many games they could port with motion control that it's just, you can't even get in this country.
Battle Raper.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Something like that. For mine, I'm going to go a little on the heavier side. I'm going to say that I don't know if it's so much my favorite, but the biggest, I think, news story or topic we covered this year has to be the COD, Infinity Ward Activision mess. And the reason I say that is not because it happened. I mean, publishers and developers and get into arguments and fights all the time. Hello, Tim Schafer. But the lawsuits and the counter lawsuits and the way the story broke with their security out in front of the Infinity Ward offices, and, you know, they're going through files and there was accusations of them leaking stuff here and doing stuff there. And I think it probably held the record for the most amount of weeks we talked about it. And on top of that, with what's come to pass, and I'll get into more of this a little later, with the franchise Infinity Ward's famous for Call of Duty, I'm going to be pretty hard-pressed going into 2011 buying a first-person shooter from Activision. So to me, my favorite probably, or the one that surprised me how long it kept running and how weird it got, was definitely the Infinity Ward versus Activision disaster. So there you go. The next one, I worded this one way, but I think we're going to change it a little bit, basically because I already know Patrick's answer. news story, and it's not going to happen. That's what, ladies and gentlemen, what you can't see, I'll do the Rush Limbaugh thing. What you can't see is what I have printed out here. The title for this one is news story or topic you hope we never cover again. Now, I already knew when I typed that sentence, I already knew what Patrick was going to say, because I know Patrick well enough that I knew exactly what he was going to say. And so in parentheses, to be fair, I put don't hold your breath, because more than likely we're still going to do it anyway. I mean, sometimes there's just stuff you can't pass up. What I'm also going to add to that, you can either stick with that or you can do news story or topic that disappointed you this year, or one you hope we never cover again, or some mix of all that. Patrick, take it away.
Well, it's good to have different opinions on the show, and this one's pretty much night and day. Basically, as Bruce McGee has said, his favorite news story or topic that we covered this year is ironically probably the one I hope that we never cover again, even though it was interesting. A few of our listeners have, you know, they've talked to me about the show over the last year, and I think they mentioned that we at WonderPod almost specialize in a lot of negative game industry news here at the show. But, you know, I don't think it's our fault. I think the industry itself in 2010 had a lot of negative things to talk about. Hopefully 2011 has less ridiculous game-related lawsuits, CEOs acting like little kids, putting their foot in their mouth, and developers quitting and suing people and counter-suing. And that's probably the one topic, personally, that even though it was interesting, and I have to say, Bruce, I'm not sure what episode it was that we first brought it out, but I mean, you went through that with a fine-tooth comb. It was very well presented for our audience. But I think, you know, for me, I think that I'd like that news topic to go away. The entire, and what I'm talking about, of course, the entire Infinity Ward employees getting quote-unquote screwed out of bonuses, then quitting, then starting up their own new company, then hiring people to sue their former employers who are now suing them, etc., etc. I really think this story turned into an overexposed event, not originally, but over a period of a month. I started to get sick of it, to be honest. You know, our Infinity Ward, or a bunch of spoiled babies who, for the second time in recent history, quit a company because they weren't being treated like a princess? I don't know. Did they drive their Lamborghinis and Bentleys out of the parking lot for a new place? I don't know. Or is it Activision who are the terrible bosses and the CEOs who are screwing them out of big bonus checks? I don't know. And personally, by the time a month of this was presented, I stopped caring. Let's play the games they make and enjoy them. This is the one topic that I hope we'll never see again, but I know we'll be hearing lots about it, especially as Respawn starts making games.
I'm going to give a little message to the listeners. If you're talking to Patrick about things you don't like, you need to make it in a format that all of us can hear it, because I'm the one that gathers the news and things, and Patrick and I don't always share every last detail of information we get from you listeners, so we have a Facebook, we have email that you'll get at the end of the show like you do every show. So if you're sick of the lawsuit stories, then you need to speak up as the listener of this audience and say it. Personally, for me, when things get that bad, we're going to talk about it. And there's always going to be a lot of negativity no matter what you do, because we're covering things, whether it's industry being idiots, whether it's gamers being idiots or whatever, and pointing it out to you to give you, you know, to make sure that you know it's there. You know, that can change. If enough listeners tell us they'd like to see more of this or that, that can change. I have to say, though, too, as somebody who doesn't particularly care one way or the other about what type of news topics we do, I was pretty sick of the lawsuit things. And if you noticed, even after Patrick was jokingly talking about barfing, toward the end of episode, you know, toward the late 30s and early 40s episodes, I think for the into next year, you know, we'll be doing them less unless they're major, major things, you know, like Kotak versus Schaefer and Infinity Ward versus Activision and whatever. So yeah, that, we didn't even have to record this. I could have told you almost verbatim what Patrick was going to say. I figured it'd be the Infinity Ward mess. Although that was, I mean,
it was huge, though. It had to be. Like I said, you know, people might say we covered a lot of negative stuff, but in defense, there was a lot of negative stuff, right? I doubt next year, hopefully, will be as bad. So.
Yeah. Well, I'm not going to hold my breath on that. I'm not going to hold my breath on that one. I'll be dead by the 1st of January. Gunsage, how about you? What was the most disturbing or thing you'd wish we never talk about again at this year's gaming?
Well, I want to provide apologies to G before I say this, but fucking zombies! don't get me wrong. Don't get me wrong.
That would have been my number two.
I was wondering who was going to do this. It wasn't going to be me. That's probably number four or five down my list. But yeah, I mean,
oh, that's awesome.
Go ahead, Gunsage. Yeah.
Well, don't get me wrong. I love zombies. There were certainly a lot of zombie games. There's fucking zombie DLC, for fuck's sake. Unnecessary zombie shit all over the place already. And, you know, it was fun to talk about zombies for a while, but then eventually it was just like, okay, we're going to talk about motherfucking zombies again. All right. And, with apologies to G, because, you know, he really gets into the whole zombie thing. I've watched a few zombie movies here and there. I've played a lot of zombie games, actually. But when it comes right down to it, it's a topic that I can only touch on sparingly. And it feels like literally every other episode we were talking about zombies for a while. So, yeah, it needs to be not undead. It needs to be just the normal dead.
I think it reached...
kill that topic. Oh.
Oh, he went there.
Headshot.
I think it reached a saturation point for me with the zombies when in Red Dead Redemption, which is a Western game written about life in the Old West along the U.S.-Mexican border, a fairly well-crafted story, and they decide to release a zombie expansion pack. I think it was at that point I just went, okay, we have jumped four sharks stacked one on top of the other. Not just one shark, but like four of them. And I mean, yeah, apologies to, you know, zombie lovers like Survivor Man G, but just, oh God. Yeah, I agree with you. I think for me, it's probably just going to be the fact that we had to be that negative, that it seems like we're just in this never-ending cycle of, you know, publishers being dicks and then gamers going overboard and then this, that, and the other thing, and no real end in sight. I mean, if you listen to the Best of Show last week when we talked to, when we interviewed Jim Sterling, you know, I asked him if gamers were culpable, and it's about, you know, all this DLC crap that's getting shoved down our throat for $15, yada, yada, yada. You know, we can only, as a gaming podcast, if we're going to do news, I should say, excuse me, we can only take what the gaming blogs and other resources that I have and present it. And unfortunately, we've gotten to the point right now in the gaming industry when companies know they can spoon feed you shit, and that a majority of people are going to buy it, but at the same time scream and holler about how horrible it is. You know, so I think the thing that disappointed me, or I just got really, really tired of, was the fact that the screaming and hollering was coming out of one side of their mouth, and while out of the other, they were buying what they were screaming and hollering about. The Left 4 Dead boycotters, the Modern Warfare 2 boycotters. I mean, not all this was specifically this year, but just to give you prime examples of it. I think also, too, the fact that, you know, I'm probably going to be pretty hard-pressed to do much first-person shooter news next year if some game doesn't come along and really break the staleness of a lot of the shooters I played this year. There's a couple coming that may do that, but really I think the first person shooter genre has kind of gotten stagnant and needs some help. I'll cap it at that. Those two things, you know, and unfortunately, you know, the listening audience is important to us. If you think we're being too negative and need to try and find happy bunny and kitten things to talk about, you know, email us, Facebook, Xbox Live. It's the fastest way to get us to change things. Otherwise, you know, and I'm not going to guarantee you we'll change it a ton, but, you know, we do listen to you if you take the time to write into us. Next one we're going to cover for 2010, biggest surprise in gaming this year. This could be anything, you know, game announcement, news story, whatever. Patrick.
Well, it's funny because when I did biggest surprise, I was going to talk about the 3DS because I thought that was pretty neat, but I already talked about that in the biggest news story, which was also a pretty good surprise, the 3D part about it at least. So I'm not going to do that again. There's no point. I'm going to go in a slightly different direction. I mean, it's still a big surprise, but it's more of a surprise for me, Patrick, personally, in my world of gaming this year. Of course, that was my invitation that I received in my inbox from Microsoft, who experienced the new technology firsthand as a beta tester for Kinect months before its actual release. That surprise, of course, was an amazingly well-kept secret that I didn't tell anyone. No one could possibly have figured out with any hints, suggestions, or by looking closely at my dashboard on Xbox Live what I was doing. This, you know, for me, that was a great surprise, especially considering that they chose me. I did not sign up to be a Kinect beta tester. I didn't fill out a form or whatever. They sent me an email. So I was surprised to learn that I was able to keep Kinect after for free and that I used them for those 2 months. That was pretty nice. I was pleased at how well the technology worked initially and that the games that I played were pretty good, pretty fun. I was cautiously optimistic about Kinect before the beta. And by the time I finished it, you know, I was very convinced that the technology was sound, and even if the games were kind of more like Wii games, but in the future we're going to have some good stuff. You know, Microsoft still has me gagged for some of the stuff we did in the first few weeks, but just let me say that there are a few videos on YouTube of certain guys who are pretty smart hacking Kinect on a PC, and they're making what looks like a 3D camera techniques, stuff like that. Not that I can say anything, but I'm pretty sure Microsoft already knows about the potential of using Kinect as a 3D camera as shown on those videos, you know? Well, maybe some people have been there and done that. I don't know. But the whole Kinect beta thing was my personal biggest surprise in gaming this year.
Gunsage, your biggest surprise in news story announcement, something like that?
Well, I guess one thing that I was hoping to put this for the 2011 thing if we did it, but one thing that I was impressed about was actually getting more information about L.A. Noire, because for the longest time, that just kind of sat dead in the water. I mean, I think it was originally Rockstar Australia, and I recall seeing something in 2000, I want to say 7, just like a very short little, you know, demo clip of it, and that's it, nothing, you know, major. And now we're seeing, you know, more and more trailers for a couple of commercials here and there. And I'm psyched. I'm absolutely psyched because we haven't had a good noir-style game in a while. And to be made by Rockstar and done the way they're doing it, it's going to be really interesting.
So that would be the fact that the game's real and apparently coming out sometime next year was the biggest surprise, you know, in gaming.
The biggest one I can think of off the top of my head, yeah.
No, that's fine. I mean, that's, you know, it doesn't have to be 20 minutes long. That was a little bit surprising to me, too. I thought that was going to be another Duke Nukem whenever. As much as I ranted about it, and as much as I was annoyed by the aftermath of it, I think the biggest surprise to me in gaming happened at E3 when Gabe Newell waddled out at Sony's press conference to say that Valve was coming to PS3 and bringing Steamworks support. Now, I say Steamworks because as of yet, I have not heard that the PS3 is getting full Steam like I have on my PC, contrary to the Sony Defense Force-style Sony fanboys. So, which still, Steamworks support is going to be pretty cool for them. May probably mean free DLC, so on and so forth. That really kind of came out of left field to me. David Jaffe was bursting himself so many times that he actually was twisted into a pretzel knot about the new Twisted Metal. Really wasn't that shocking. But now, Gabe Newell and Valve finally going to the PS3 was a bit shocking, but made sense. I mean, it's a good business decision. Good business decision. All the ass smooching that happened for a couple months afterwards kind of got on my nerves, as you noticed, because we did a few stories about it. But, yeah, I'm going to go with that. That was pretty impressive. The 3DS was right there, too, but Patrick already covered that. The next one, and the reason Gunsage was a little confused, it wasn't his fault. I left a word out of it, or a couple words out of this, guys, and I apologize. Game that surprised you the most this year, or could be disappointed you that you played, Patrick.
Okay, well, it's interesting. That's a it's actually well written for my response because a game, the game I'm about to talk about did both. It surprised me in one aspect this year, and the same game disappointed me in another aspect. I'm sure if you guys listened not that long ago, you'll probably know what the hell I'm talking about. That game is Call of Duty Black Ops. It surprised me because I was expecting the usual not-so-great single-player mode campaign from Treyarch. I was expecting grenade spam up my arse. I was expecting poor level design, a generic story. I was expecting Tier 2 B team compared to Infinity Ward. I did not get that. I was very surprised that the single player campaign in Call of Duty Black Ops, in my opinion, was pretty much the exact opposite of what I thought. It was a very solid single player with a good story and pretty well designed maps, and I liked it. So I was very surprised about the single player mode. Now, what disappointed me about the game was I was expecting a pretty good multiplayer mode. And what I got was, disappointingly, the exact opposite. It has a lot of spawn camping. We've talked about this before. Bottlenecked areas and piss-ass poor attempt at keeping parties together if more than two people want to play. It was a very big surprise. There have been update after update after update. Maybe they've even changed the spawn camping. I don't know. I don't even care. I'll go back and play it because I bought it. But, yeah, the multiplayer on Call of Duty Black Ops just didn't do it for me. So, it's almost – the game was almost perfect for your question, Bruce, because it surprised me and at the same time, it disappointed me.
I think what I find to be surprising there, because I was not shocked that the multiplayer was nothing more than reskin Modern Warfare 2 with worse maps, is how many people whose opinions I respect. And ladies and gentlemen, you got to understand, I can pretty much count in the gaming industry, or at least the enthusiast press at all, meaning, gaming comics and things of that nature. I could probably count on two hands and still have several fingers left over of how many people whose opinion I genuinely respect and, so on. How many people think it's great? I mean, the single player was really good. It had some issues that I've discussed 100 times. I don't want to even talk about it anymore. But the multiplayer was just junk. It's literally got me to the point where unless they do something radically different for Modern Warfare 3 or whatever's coming next, I'm not buying it. It's not worth $60 to me. Treyarch did a good job with stuffing enough stuff in there like combat training and zombies and other things that I don't feel like I got gypped out of my $60, but they really pushed me into the category where I'm not going to buy the next one. But it just really shocks me how many people I consider really intelligent and usually well-informed are just gaga over this game. And I don't get it. Maybe I'm the one that's wrong. There's always that possibility, but I just really don't see it. That's not mine, but I just wanted to tack on to Patrick because I knew exactly what you were going to say as soon as you said it both surprised you and disappointed you.
Yep.
The disappointment factor on the multiplayer wasn't enough to be considered a genuine surprise on my end. It just wasn't. Gunsage, how about you? What's yours?
Well, mine was a game that was delayed. It was a game I was really looking forward to, and then it turned out to be a miserable pile of fucking dog shit. And that game is Alpha Protocol. I was completely pissed. I mean, I was actually happy that I didn't have the money to go ahead and get that at the time. Because when I started seeing the reviews and I started seeing the videos of it and everything, I'm like, they took this long to make this? I mean, with Naughty Bear, it was from a studio I had never heard of. It was kind of a hit or miss deal. It was an interesting idea. I was disappointed in that too, but definitely the biggest was Alpha Protocol because I'm looking at it and I'm going, they spent that long working on this product and it looks like it was something that was just shovelware. And the sad part is, from what I understand, the story, the writing, the dialogue system, all that is really well done. But everything else, the actual game mechanics, how it operates, how it works, is bullshit. I mean, it doesn't take much to make an RPG. You get the mechanics down and then make sure you have a decent story, and there you go. You'll go ahead and hook in just about anyone. But when you can't even get your basic mechanics down, it doesn't matter how well written it is. I am thoroughly just disappointed. I still really want the game just to see if, you know, if the dialogue really is that good. But it would be one of those things where I know that I'm going into it buying a crappy game. So that was definitely a big disappointment for me.
Mine was really hard, and I had it between three. Now, I'm just going to tell you the two I didn't pick. I'm not going to talk about them. The two I didn't pick was Limbo and Mass Effect. Now, Mass Effect had a lot to do with how they did the story in Mass Effect 2. Although the definitive version running on Mass Effect 3's engines coming to the PS3, my God, the Sony fanboys will do anything to whip up the flame war. The game I ended up picking was Deadly Premonition as my biggest surprise of the year. When Jim Sterling started talking about it, and of course we covered a little bit of this in the interview with him too, I just am like, okay, for $20, I gotta see this. I totally expected to be disappointed and to find this to be something that just really struck Jim's fancy, but wasn't for hardly any other people. Any other people? Nice. Anybody else? Kind of like Dynasty Warriors is with him. And knowing him and knowing his preferred sense of humor and kind of comedy style, I should say, I just didn't really think. I thought I'd get a few cheap chuckles out of it, and that'd be it. Now, bar none, I won't run through it all again, but like we said when we talked to him, for $20, it was the best $20 I spent all year. I mean, just unbelievable how funny and how laughing out loud and like pumping my fist when this silly story segues were going on, playing a single player game. You know, I usually don't get that excited or that enthusiastic unless we're playing a close death match and something and we win or lose, you know. It just overall, Deadly Premonition came out of nowhere. I'm glad to see it's done as well as it's done. I am going to absolutely lose it if somewhere, some blog site that's fairly good size hoists it up as a legitimate Game of the Year candidate. That would be icing on the cake. But, yeah, Deadly Premonition, biggest surprise of 2010 for me. All right, before we get into our Game of the Year discussion, which is broken up into a couple different parts, we have one final thing to wrap up for 2010 as far as I'm concerned. And that is Gamer Dick of the Year. Yes, I'm sure some of you were wondering if we were going to do it. And yes, of course, we're going to do it. We're negative. there. We're just like Jim. We hate everything. Rawr. Patrick, give me, in some shape or form, your Gamer Dick of the Year.
Well, this is a hard one because Gamer Dick is kind of one of our trademarked gimmicks, trademark segments of the show. Gamer dicks are everywhere. I mean, I hate to say it, but I don't think I've played a game online in any type of game that hasn't had at least one idiot in it. So I'm not going to go with a specific name. If you guys want to look at past episodes, we do call out specific people when they're being really big dicks. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to call out people who've done things at gaming stores. I'm talking a very generalized thing that's really bugging me, especially as of late. And that's, I'm gonna put them in one category, and that's the people who either A, quit a game when it's, you know, halfway, not even halfway through it. They quit an online game, whether it's Call of Duty, whether it's Halo, whether it's whatever, at the very beginning, or even more annoying for me, idle through the game. Their character is just sitting there doing nothing. So I really find the idlers and the quitters to be the biggest gaming dicks of the year. I mean, if you don't want to play, why did you start the game? And if, like, what are you doing not playing the game in the first place? So either way, you should want to play a game. Most games last at the most, what, 5 minutes? You signed up for the game. You clicked start. Why aren't you playing? Why are you idling? It's ridiculous. Or why did you quit? So for me, I think the biggest dicks of the year, playing games online at least, are the idlers and the quitters.
Both of you are dicks.
Gunsage, who or what is your gamer dick of the year?
I have a what. I'm going to expand on what I had said previously. The biggest dick of the year that I've come into contact with has been, in general, Japanese game servers. Not just the Capcom servers, but also the Konami servers. And I think it really just comes from this idea that the Japanese really don't care about online gameplay. And the main reason why I say that is because Castlevania, Harmony of Despair for Xbox Live Arcade. Now, it's only $15, but it's like, well, yeah, but it's supposed to be a multiplayer Castlevania. So why would you go ahead and start up with a system that it doesn't work half the time? It often drops people right as soon as the game starts. There's no host migration. You can't have people jump in and jump out whenever they want. And basically, you have to wait in a lobby to gather people. You don't know what levels they're able to play or not, which is another design oversight. It's fucking ridiculous. None of this shit was thought out well. Now, in the case of Dead Rising 2, my biggest complaint is even when you get four people in a game, and you have to have four people because they won't do computer-controlled opponents for some reason, sometimes it'll just kick everyone. It'll start to load up, and then it'll kick everyone. Or somebody will be kicked right as soon as the first match starts, so then they idle for the rest of the game because they won't have a computer opponent take over. They won't even acknowledge that the person is out of the game. You won't find out until the game is over. So sometimes that makes it easy, but sometimes it makes it really fucking stupid because it's like, well, yeah, I'm winning because of cheap, dumbass server issues. Plus, sometimes you'll get kicked randomly. And, you know, I thought maybe it was my connection, but literally it's been happening to a ridiculous extent. And the weirdest part is Capcom should not be having this problem. When you do co-op on that game, there's never a problem. But there's always a problem in, say, Lost Planet 2. There's always a problem in, say, four-person combat as far as Dead Rising 2. And yet there's almost never a problem in Street Fighter 4. So I don't get it. Maybe it's an issue as far as they've got it down when it's just two people. I don't know. But it's still, it's no excuse, because basically it makes the games just about unplayable. You have to futz around with them so much just to get them to work. I mean, the main reason I'm calling them out, well, I haven't really been playing a lot of stuff online this year, but also because when I go to play something online and it's a Japanese game, at this point, I already know what I'm going to get, and it's a big pile of fucking shit. A $15 Monday Night Combat game was able to hold its own from a developer nobody ever heard of. Bloody Good Time as well, a $5 game. But a fucking professionally made Castlevania title, Dead Rising 2, Lost Planet 2, all this shit. I think even Bionic Commando was having server issues when it came out. It's just stupid. The Japanese developers absolutely do not care, and I think the main reason why is because they figure, well, we'll either buy it or we won't, and fuck the online play. It's not that big of a deal. I think they really need to wake up.
Boy, I had a tough one with this. For those of you that have listened from about episode 5 to roughly to today, know that a certain gamer really gets on my nerves. He's had 1,000 different names. We've even gone so far as to boycott even mentioning him on the show for a period of time. But truly, he's more what embodies what I find wrong with a lot of younger gamers. It's not so much him specifically. So my gamer dick of the year is the Left 4 Dead 2 Little Generals. Now, quick recap for those of you that did not listen in that episode. I think it was 20-ish, late 20-ish, something like that. The Little Generals and I were playing a survival game on Left 4 Dead 2, and they kept setting up all these elaborate booby traps and defenses so we'd survive longer, and in the end, all it did was get us killed. Meanwhile, these three yo-yos are arguing with each other about the best way for us to die fast. Now, if you have not played survival mode in Left 4 Dead 2, it is you are supposed to see how long you can survive, not how fast can you die in a giant fireball, generally. So I tip my hat to the little generals from Left 4 Dead 2 because not only were they dicks, but they were entertaining. And I think I probably stayed longer just because listening to the three of them try and act like they knew what they were doing when none of them had a bloody clue was at least mildly entertaining. Much like Gunsage was talking about with knowing what he was going to get from Capcom's servers, I also knew what I was going to get each time we tried it, but still I stuck around. So while some of you longtime listeners of the show probably thought mine was going to be fairly obvious, no. That's really not even worth my time at this point in the year. So, to the little generals, Gamer Dicks, and Left 4 Dead 2, I salute you, because you're dicks. You're also dumbasses. Okay, now we're going to go into our Game of the Year portion of the show. And I expect this to be, well, I don't expect it to be controversial. We don't have a big enough audience. But I expect there to be some surprises. The first thing we're going to do, and it's not so much a Game of the Year, but I didn't want to drag out Game of the Year and make it into a WonderPod's version of the VGAs. So the first thing we're going to discuss, and if you want to call it your downloadable Game of the Year, fine. Patrick, what was your favorite downloadable game? Full game, not DLC, on any service or platform.
Well, I'd say my favorite downloadable game, and, you know, favorite game in general, the way I'm going to look at it, is not, you know, necessarily the best graphics, is not necessarily the most creative or original title. It's the game personally I've had the most fun with. It's my favorite game. So, my favorite downloadable game of the year, I'm gonna have to go with Hydro Thunder Hurricane for my favorite downloadable. It's like I said it before, it's like a cross between Wave Race 64, way back on the Nintendo 64, and mix that up with San Francisco Rush from the arcades, and you've got Hydro Thunder. A fast, fun arcade water racing game that entertained the heck out of me this year, and that I had, and this is the key, the most fun playing any downloadable game this year. I don't think that a lot of people seem to realize that the game was supposed to be over the top. We talked about this in the past. People were complaining the game wasn't realistic, especially the water physics, yet these same people must have missed out on the giant monsters and UFOs in the game, you know? Really funny. Said it before, I'll say it again. The game is unrealistic, and that's why I love it. I had the most fun playing Hydro Thunder Hurricane out of any downloadable game this year. It's not the most original game. Like I said, Wave Race and San Francisco Rush were a long time ago, but it was the most fun. So that is my favorite DLC game of the year.
Gunsage, what is yours?
This was a really tough call for me. There were a lot of great games. Some of them we played together. Some of them were just great single-player experiences, like Limbo, for example. I took about an hour and went through every single one of the indie games, every single one of the Xbox Live Arcade titles, and even all the different stuff I had gotten off of Steam. And I had to choose the one that, to this day, I still listen to its music. Just I don't even have it installed right now, but I literally went and downloaded its entire soundtrack, and I just listen to it on a regular basis when I'm writing. And that would have to be Scott Pilgrim versus the World. I mean, if you're any kind of a retro addict as far as just, you know, you like beat 'em ups, or you remember like River City Ransom or even Final Fight Double Dragon, whatever, it's got so many different references to older video games, you know, music being done by Anamanaguchi, of course, and then it's got the whole, what is it, his name, like, Robert Paulson or whatever the hell it is, who did the pixel art. And it comes together and it's perfect. It's such a really, just really fun game. I mean, I literally played it over and over and over again. And I've done everything there is to do in the game now, just wait for the DLC that should be coming out whenever. And until that point, I've literally gone through, gotten all of Onomatoguchi's stuff, and I just listen to it every day now because I cannot get enough of it. It's some good. It's just some really, really good shit.
I am going to go in another direction, although I did enjoy Scott Pilgrim vs. the World. I really enjoyed Limbo. I really enjoyed... You can actually pretty much add me in the Patrick camp for Hydro Thunder. The game, downloadable game, that has entertained me the most this year is Minecraft. If you don't know what Minecraft is by now, well, first off, there's something wrong with you. Second off, it's a downloadable game made by the Swedish guy. He got some love at Penny Arcade. It kind of took off from there. It's 14.90 euro, which translates to like, I don't know, $18-19. Just, it didn't quite give me the dollar value that Deadly Premonition did. But it's still, I was playing it before the show tonight. There's so many things you can do, even single player. You know, there's some multiplayer cropping up now, and it's going to be part of future versions. But overall, Minecraft has given me more entertaining hours and fun. Like Patrick said, what you're going to notice in our Game of the Years is about fun and about actually reaching us as gamers, gamers who have played a metric ton of video games over the years. So if you haven't gotten Minecraft yet, it is still in the alpha phase. It is still $14.90 from Minecraft.net, I think it is. He's soon going to go into the beta phase, and you're going to have to pay full price for it. If you pick it up now as an alpha, you will get all the future updates for free. I highly recommend it. You cannot go wrong. Just think of it as first-person SimCity. If you can figure out how to build it, you can do it. It's just fun. Okay, now we're going to move into the big boy territory, into the actual game of the year. Yes, that's right. Just like every other thing with the word video game in it, we're doing game of the year. How we're going to do this is first, we're going to do our two runner-ups. That's right. We just decided that instead of just shitting out our game of the year, we're going to give a little love to two runner-ups. Patrick, why don't you give me your two runners-up this year?
All righty. Two runners-up. I think Bruce and I, we've made it pretty clear that, at least for us, Game of the Year is all about how much fun we had. And I'm really going with that with these games, you know. Honorable mention number one right off the bat, Donkey Kong Country Returns. I only got this a few weeks ago, and I'm loving the heck out of it. Yes, for the Wii... I know, it's amazing. I hardly ever play the Wii all year, but one of the games is definitely a runner-up for Game of the Year. I recently acquired it. It's a great 2D / 3D graphics platformer, really. It's after the decent but not amazing Donkey Kong Country 64, it's like Donkey Kong Country Returns. It's from the series on the Super Nintendo. It's like almost like Donkey Kong Country 64 never existed. It's, you know, that's how good it is. It feels like it came right from the Super Nintendo itself, you know. The platforming is very fun, well-paced, and at times don't be misled by the cute graphics. It's challenging. The visuals are great, the sound and music is also great. You know, anyone will like this game and like it a lot. However, if you're like me, and I'm guessing also Gunsage, did you play the original Super Nintendo Donkey Kong Country games?
Oh, all three of them, yeah.
You play them? Yeah. So, I mean, I'm thinking for people like me and Gunsage, you know, it goes from being a very good game to being an absolutely great game because we played the originals. The nostalgia, the music, the characters, everything's taken up a notch, yet it's still, like I said, it feels like Donkey Kong Country 4, really, from the Super Nintendo. It's really neat. So that's definitely one of my top picks for Game of the Year. My other honorable mention goes to a game that, funny. It's kind of funny because I didn't know, and I don't think any of us knew anything about this game this time last year. It came as a surprise to me, and it came as a surprise to all you guys. One of the first Wonder Pods, if not the first Wonder Pod that we ever did, we talked about this title. That game is Darksiders, which is on the PlayStation 3, Xbox 360, and I'm pretty sure if it's not on Steam, it will be soon. I think it must be. It's also on PC anyway, so buy in a box. Darksiders, I've said it before, it's a great combination of Zelda gameplay and God of War gameplay with a decent story of its own and decent, pretty fun, interesting characters, at least I thought. I had a lot of fun playing it. You know, you get to play as War, for God's sake, who's one of the horsemen of the apocalypse. I can't even say the word right now. But, yes, he is a badass. I really like the pacing of the game. A lot of the Zelda-inspired levels, you know, they're slow-paced. You've got environmental puzzles. You got your boomerang and your harpoon, your bombs and moving statues and doing all sorts of stuff just like Zelda. And then you get these, I don't know, times where it's nothing more than a ridiculous button-smashing real-time event sequencing hack and slash, kind of like God of War. So Darksiders was both unexpected and very fun for me, and it came very, very close to being my game of the year. Those are my two runners-up.
I want to make a comment, and then again I don't. Gunsage, what's your two runners-up?
We're just doing the runners-up, or we're also going to do the number one?
No, just the runners-up.
Okay. Well, again, it took me a while to figure out what I wanted, because I had narrowed it down to like 10 or 12 games, and I was like, oh, man. My first runner-up is Red Dead Redemption. It's a really, really good game. It came out of nowhere. I certainly wasn't looking forward to it because I wasn't really impressed with Red Dead Revolver, you know? And on top of that, really the only other game that had come out like it was Gun. So I was like, okay, I don't really see why it's getting so much press. I mean, what, it's just a Western game, whatever. And then more and more people started playing it, and then it was one of those things where I'm like, every motherfucker on my friends list is playing this game. Okay, I should probably check it out. So I got it. I liked it. It's much more than just Grand Theft Auto with horses, obviously. But some people might say that, and it's a reasonable assessment. But on the same token, it's like, well, yeah, but that's still fucking awesome. So whatever. It had a lot of great features to it. It's getting zombie DLC, which is totally fucking stupid, but hey, whatever, it appeals to some people, I guess. Great game. Haven't played it in a while now. Probably should pick it back up again, because I still haven't beaten it. My other runner-up would be Mass Effect 2, and the main reason for this isn't just because it's well-written, it's also because it is, in a way, almost totally different from the original, just by, you know, how everything plays out. I really didn't think I was going to like it that much at first because the way you level up is so radically different from the original in that you don't level up on the fly, you level up after missions. I mean, yeah, you can get a little amount of experience here and there doing some, you know, minor things, but it's nothing that's going to force you into leveling up. So you really have to think about how you want to level your characters up because you don't get very many points. That, and since the game plays more like Gears of War rather than, you know, the way it was as far as just, you know, full-on space combat, barely utilizing cover and what have you, it feels more like a shooter, and yet it's still got that really heavy RPG aspect. So, I mean, it really blew me away. I've already played through it a couple of times, actually, and I'm getting ready to go ahead and play through it again at some point, but of course on the insane difficulty, so might be a little while.
When I sat down and started thinking about what I wanted to do with Game of the Year, I thought about it in terms of what pisses me off about the standard issue IGN, 1UP, Joystick, Kotaku, whoever, Game of the Year. And I realized I wanted to come up with a set of criteria that was not, you know, appeasing fanboys, was not about how many copies were sold. It was about, A, like Patrick and I have talked about, how much fun it was, and B, something that just really, really, really stuck with me. So, In the end, I had probably four or five games that could have gone anywhere in these three positions. So it was a little bit of a difficult choice, but it definitely was not based upon the silly shit that seems to come attached to most game of the years. My second runner-up is going to be Deadly Premonition. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. $20 game, totally fun, totally just takes the wind out of needing high-dollar graphics, high-dollar story writing, and all the silly shit that we seem to think makes a game great. It was just fun. It was ridiculous. It was outlandish. It was just insane at times and a great game. I have not beaten it completely yet, but I'm close. That is my plan over the winter. The rest of the winter is to finally finish that up. My first runner up is also Red Dead Redemption, and I want to counter with something Gunsage said. I don't even think it's a fair assessment to call this game Grand Theft Auto 4 with horses, because I've never finished a Grand Theft Auto because I get bored and I wander off and I go watch grass grow or something like that. From start to finish, I love this game. Being a historian type nerd, I was really impressed with the story, with how fairly faithful and accurate they were with keeping the weaponry and the animals and everything period-based. They fudged slightly, but nobody outside of historian nerds like me would know. There were other games that stretched it far more than Red Dead Redemption did. So my first runner-up is going to be Red Dead Redemption. Now we'll move on into the moment you've all waited for. I suspect that we'll probably get at least one that's going to appease the mass fanboy, non-thinking, ignorant, shitbag audience. Maybe, but you never know. Patrick, why don't you go ahead and drum roll, please. Give us your game of the year.
Cue the drum roll. Well, as I said, I had the three there, and I really didn't know which one to pick. So I went with Halo Reach as my personal favorite game of the year, because to be perfectly honest, sure, I had fun playing Darksiders and I had fun playing Donkey Kong Country Returns, and to be honest, all three games, if you could measure fun, are about the same. But the thing about Halo Reach, and this is why I picked it, is the amount of fun that I have with it. You know, you look at a game like Darksiders, well, I played it for a couple weeks and it's over. I might go back to it at some point, but that's it. Look at Halo Reach. I'll be playing that for months having fun. I've already been playing it for months having fun, and that's really why it just got the edge over the other two. You know, you might look at it and say, oh, it's just Halo Reach, but really, I think it's got a lot going for it in the game, you know. There's the single player, which, like most first-person shooters, it's short, or like maybe all first-person shooters, I don't know, is short. But, you know, not that many first-person shooters out there actually have the ability to very smoothly, or at all, have a four-player co-op in their campaign. You know, you cannot experience the co-op in a game like Battlefield or COD Black Ops, only in Halo Reach, so that's kind of expands on the single player, I think. Not to mention Halo Reach's firefight co-op mode. You know, that thing's so ridiculously customizable, either playing alone or in a group, online or offline. You could have tons of replayability with that and lots of fun. Speaking of groups, I'm going to say this now because it's true, or maybe parties is a better way of putting it. No other shooter game, hell, Gunsage just talked about problems with online games that aren't shooters. No other game comes close to the online coding that Bungie has created for their online games. Always getting kicked out of parties bigger than two people in COD Black Ops, joining the wrong game even if it said you were with your friends 3 seconds ago, getting booted. Well, you must be playing on games made by Activision or maybe EA, because it's reasonably rare for this to happen in Halo Reach. Which is another good thing that, you know, staying together in groups, less hassle. Halo Reach has also, to my knowledge, I could be wrong, people could tell me, I don't know PlayStation 3 that well, the only level creating tools in any platform game out there. It's called Forge World, and it's very robust. I haven't used it that much yet. Who knows? Maybe in 2011 I'll make some sort of map, but, you know, I'm pretty terrible at map making. This is where I wish... Gunsage, I know you don't want to buy the game, but this is where I wish you were here just to make some maps, because I know you're a lot more creative than I am at designing levels. But this is something that other shooters on consoles simply do not have. And there is a ridiculous amount of people. There's a contest right now by Bungie, and they're going to take, I think it's the top five made. They're going to vote on them, and then they're going to rank them somehow. The top five maps, and they're going to put it in the playlist. So if you're good enough, everyone's going to play it. It's going to be in there. So definitely think that that's a great mode. And, of course, there's one of my favorite modes. We all know if you've seen the YouTube videos, and that's the theater mode. I mean, quite cool. You know, while the latest COD game attempted to make a theater mode, and I applaud them for their efforts, it's, you know, aside from that, this is the only other game that has it. And I'm going to say this, and I don't mean to be rude to Treyarch, it's the only good theater mode. Let me put it that way. You know, it takes way too long in COD just to load up a goddamn screenshot. But Halo Reach's theater mode is very easy to use, very fast, and, you know, you can recommend your friends' files and all sorts of crap. Go to Bungie.net. I mean, all of this is just a lot of content that Halo Reach has that other games might have part of, but they don't have all of it. And then if you think about it, the ability to combine all of these, some of which are exclusive features, you know, you can create your own level if you're good enough in Forge World, send out a party invite, your friends could play, and then you could record it. I mean, you can combine all of these modes. So really, as far as I'm concerned, sure, it sounds like the generic response to Get Out, but Halo Reach, Bungie has done a very good job making this game, whether it's the smooth online play, whether it's, you know, the universe, you like it. I have had more fun playing Halo Reach in all of its different modes and different ways of playing than any other game this year, and because I continue to enjoy it, whereas games like Darksiders and even Donkey Kong Country, when I'm done with it, you know, I'll be done with it. So that is why I choose Halo Reach, the replayability, and the fun. That is my personal game of the year.
No, actually, it's not a cop-out. And if you had not explained it as well as you had, for the first time in any episode of WonderPod, I'd have thrashed you. Because here's the thing, ladies and gentlemen, and any blogger or whatever you want to call yourself listening, that is the only way I will read a Halo Reach Game of the Year article, if it's that well beyond the title, as if it's that well explained. That is a compelling reason to make Halo Reach Game of the Year, right there. The only thing I will counter a little bit and defend is after the first 2 days with Battlefield Bad Company, we had no problems that were not created by shitty internet connections. So.
Hamsters?
Yes. So, you know, Battlefield in my mind and Halo were the only two that got it right, you know, and Halo still did it a little better. But no, it's not a cop out. You did a really excellent job explaining why it's your game of the year selection. I just wish the enthusiast press, when they have their nerdgasms or are getting checks in the mail, would at least attempt to explain it that well. So, no, I'm not. I knew you were going to do Halo. I just was going to be curious to see if your reasoning was going to be sufficient to even make a gamer asshole like me go, yeah, no, that's that, you know, I mean, you have a right to your opinion, but I also have a right to go, yeah, it's fucking Halo. Gunsage, what is your personal game of the year? Oh, wait. Also, listening audience at home, if you're curious, we are only basing these off of games we played, which I think also sometimes does not happen elsewhere. Okay. Sorry, Gunsage. Now, what is your game of the year?
I'd like to preface this by saying that it is the only game that I beat more times than Scott Pilgrim this year, and it's longer. So, what's better than running around in a summer dress and flip-flops with a funny mask on, attacking people with a chainsaw? doing the same thing but attacking people with a chainsaw that's strapped to kayak paddles. I am referring, of course, to Dead Rising 2. Now, the original Dead Rising was a great game. It was. But it had a lot of what some people would consider to be design flaws. It was things that made the game, in a way, almost artificially more difficult. Things like deliberately putting certain battles in certain areas where there were no save points, or having them back-to-back, or just long-ass areas between save points. You know, only understanding that you had the ability to go ahead and get certain shortcuts if you did certain things. Dead Rising 2 was a lot more forgiving in this respect. You were able to level up a lot quicker, especially with the different combo weapons and the bonuses and the magazines and the everything else that you could get in the game. The moves were more brutal. The weapons were hilarious. The different things you could do to the zombies were just great and over the top. And as much as I got tired of talking about zombies all year, it was literally, it was one of those games that just, it was brilliant. It was put together in such a way that it was like, this is exactly what the original Dead Rising should have been. That's literally what I went through the game thinking. And the reason why I beat it more times than Scott Pilgrim is because Scott Pilgrim is first and foremost a brawler. It has 7 levels. It's not hard to beat. You might die once or twice in the beginning. With Dead Rising 2, I've gotten every last one of the endings in the game and then gone back through a few more times just to experiment, just to have fun, just to see all the different little things that I can do to the zombies. I mean, it's just entertaining as hell to do things like tying a fucking disembodied hand to dynamite, throwing it in a group of zombies, and they're all like, oh shit, fucking meat! And they go ahead and swarm around it, and boom! Motherfuckers everywhere. Just hilarious. The story's not nearly as good as the original, but it also doesn't matter because the main character is a hell of a lot better, and the combo weapons are absolutely insane. It is literally one of the most fun experiences I have had in a long, long, long time in gaming.
Mine is Epic Dungeon. Good night, everybody. No, okay. I'm kidding. Boy, you know, I thought mine was going to be Red Dead Redemption. I really did. From January of this year on forward, it's really the one that just kind of tied it all together for me in different aspects. I played it a ton. And then a game came along that was beautiful. The levels were well designed, for any level of play. You know, whether you're hardcore or casual or just a gamer like me. The story was well written. It was not the best story probably I ran across in 2010, but it was damn close. Again, the graphics were just gorgeous. The settings, the way it was worked out, the interaction between the characters was amazing. I never got bored playing it. I never really wanted to put it down, although I don't binge game. I don't sit there for hours on end. I've got too much other shit going on. If you're not sure what game I'm talking about, it is Enslaved, Odyssey of the West. Bar none, even though it was late in the year, bar none, probably my favorite game of the year. Oh, no, probably. Just amazing settings. Awesome platforming. And you longtime listeners of the show know what it takes for me to say that. The character interactions between the three characters in the game, amazing. You know, it really, really, really hooked me in. I probably didn't have as much long-term fun with it as Patrick's talking about with Halo, but just for a one-time single-player experience in an era when things like Bioshock 2 have multiplayer when it doesn't need it. Enslaved Odyssey to the West is just an awesome, awesome game. I recommend you check it out. And there you go. It's games of the year. Guys, I was going to do a little bit about 2011, but we have already got a ton of audio. So, real quick, Patrick, give me one thing you're looking forward to going into 2011.
Looking forward to second generation Kinect games and possibly some more quote unquote hardcore aspects to the games.
Gunsage.
I already said LA Noir. I would say Deus Ex 3, but since it's Squaresoft, I know that won't be until 2014.
Okay, so basically it's L.A. Noir.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Okay. For me, it's probably going to be two things. It's going to be Homefront, which is looking really, really awesome, and may finally break first-person shooters out of the kind of stagnation that I feel they're in. And second, it will be to see how well the motion controllers from Sony and Microsoft continue to do. They're both doing extremely well. Kinect's, of course, getting a little more press because it's, you know, something that people can hack and interact with and mess with the new tech. But I was pleasantly surprised to see how well the motion controllers have done thus far. As we get into 2011, I think we'll have a more definitive picture of it. So there you go. One final thing, and for me, and then we'll do some horn out like we always do and get out of here. I personally want to thank everybody that listens to the show, obviously. I also want to tell you that stay tuned. We're taking Christmas and New Year's off, but WonderPod is going to be even bigger and better next year. There's going to be a lot of things coming from us. Hopefully most of them you'll enjoy. Hopefully most of them will surprise you and will keep you listening to us. Patrick, any final thing real quick before we go to whoring?
Not really, except for I would like to thank everyone who's listening. I'd like to, you know, it's great that you're listening, and thank you. If you can, give us a little more feedback. You know, we like the Facebook feedback. We like the questions, but we got an email address. Send us an email, stuff like that. Just like to also thank now at a warm, fuzzy moment, I'd like to thank my two co-hosts, Bruce McGee and Mr. Gunsage. I've had a lot of fun this year talking about video games, complaining about gamer dicks, and, you know, it's great fun. It wouldn't be as fun without you guys, so thank you guys, and thank you fans, and yep, I think maybe there might be some hints dropping on Facebook in the next couple weeks. There might be some different things going on next year, early year. Stay tuned.
Yeah, you're going to want to stick around. If you follow me on Twitter, you're also going to want to stick around. Gunsage, any final things before we get out of here for 2010?
Well, happy holidays, and don't be a gamer dick. Santa's watching.
Patrick, hit him with one final 2010 horror festival.
All right, I'm putting on my mini skirt right now, and I'm sitting at the corner, and I'm going to whore out. Of course, you all know, and we really appreciate, if you subscribe to us on iTunes, you know, it's an easy way to do it, and hey, why not leave a comment while you're there? Another interesting thing that I'll bring up that I found out at a listener of the show and a relative of mine's house was that we are also on Apple TV, those cool little Apple TV gizmos. If you're bored out of your head and you want to listen to a podcast instead of watching TV on your Apple TV, we are available on Apple TV. I listened to, I forget what episode it was, one of the episodes, or some of it, at Stinky Wombat's house on Apple TV, so that's pretty neat. So what else do we have? Of course we have WonderPod Online on Facebook. I just got a friend request today from someone who I don't even think speaks English. So that's interesting, and of course I accepted it. I think he's speaking Spanish or something. I'm pretty sure that's what it is. We accept all comers, and you know, send us a friend request, send us a question. We have answered questions on Facebook in the past, and we'll do it again. What else do we got? Well, we're on YouTube. There's some Halo Reach Team WonderPod stuff out there. There's some other stuff like that. I think that's about all for the whoring, except for, of course, our email address.
Yes, the email address is morphinenation23@gmail.com, morphinenation23@gmail.com. Until 2011, happy holidays, Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Happy Kwanzaa. Don't drink and drive. You just hit a pothole and spill it all over yourself. I, too, would also like to thank my co-host for a great year. I am Bruce McGee. As far as you know, I'm out of here.
Goodbye.
Merry Spaghetti Monstermas.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Happy Winterimus. And what was the one from... Wintering misses from Control Alt Delete. What was the fucking one from Seinfeld?
Festivus or something like that. The Festivus for the rest of us.
Happy Festivus. Something. Yes, whatever. That's it. Yes. Yep. Yes. We're out of here. See ya. Oh, we're back in 2 weeks. Something like
Bye.
That. We'll keep you informed.